taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome back to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. We learn from our history so we are not condemned to repeat it. Today is a very special day in history. Today is a day, it's the anniversary of the shot heard around the world. Now, most of us have learned about this, we've heard about this, but there's so much more that's tied up in this event. And there's so much we can learn from this. And my concern is if we don't learn from what happened back in 1775 and look at what's going on in our history today and realize that we are running pell-mell right back to April 19th, 1775. So I wanted to bring to you an article I wrote in commemoration of this very special day. On the morning of April 19, 1775, the actions of a few would have an impact that would resound throughout history. Now, most of us were taught about the shot heard around the world, but have you learned what led up to that event? Let's take this 246th anniversary of this famous event to remind ourselves how we actually got here. Last year, I wrote the book Fighting for Liberty. The idea of the book came from my research into the actions of one of the militiamen in the Battle of Lexington. What concerns me is how much we are repeating the history that led not only to these battles, but to a war between the states and their formal central government. Now, reading from my book, September 1, 1774, Charlestown, South Carolina. General Thomas Gage ordered 260 Redcoats to seize the gunpowder from the powder house. This act incensed the colonists, becoming known as the Powder Alarm. By the end of the day, 20,000 militiamen had mobilized and started marching towards Boston. If the British could seize arms or powder from colonists in South Carolina, they would be willing to seize them from all of the colonists. The colonists viewed this as not just another infringement on their rights, but as an act of war. 5 days later, the people of Worcester and Suffolk counties, Massachusetts, replaced the royal governor's militia officers with their own. In other words, the colonists took control of the state militia. How did General Gage respond? By directing his redcoats to begin general warrantless searches for arms and ammunition. On December 3rd, General Gage received a letter from Lord Dartmouth, the Secretary of State for America. In this letter, Lord Dartmouth suggested that the only way to prevent further violence was to disarm the colonists. General Gage replied that the only way to do what Lord Dartmouth suggested would require the use of force. General Gage's letter became public when it was read in the British House of Commons. This was the tinderbox that could lead to war, and all it needed was a single spark. We sometimes act as if gun control is something new, as if it didn't exist before 1934 in the National Firearms Act. However, gun control not only existed before the colonies declared themselves independent from Great Britain, it was the tinder that would light a fire across all colonies and lead them to declaring themselves to be free and independent states. Now, you may be asking yourself why I put gun control in quotes. Well, the answer is simple. And in reading just a few of these paragraphs, you should see that gun control is not about controlling guns, but about controlling people. General Gage did not order the seizing of the powder house in Charlestown because he was concerned about gun violence, but about the growing unease among the colonists. Rather than tamping down the foreshadowed uprising, this act made things worse. Not only were colonists in South Carolina upset, but the citizens of the other colonies as well. 20,000 militiamen did not mobilize to protect their hunting rights or even their individual self-defense. They saw an ever more tyrannical government attempting to take away their best method of protecting themselves from current and future infringements on their rights. It doesn't take much investigating to see the repeated calls by some in politics and the media today for the modern seizing of the powder house.
The slightest provocation is met with renewed calls to deny people the right to keep and bear arms, to own the weapons they want, and to restrict the ammunition they can carry. There are two things we need to keep in mind, though. First of all, almost none of these proposed regulations, orders, and laws actually prevent, much less punish, those who use their arms for evil. All of the claims of reducing gun violence and making things safer have been proven wrong by simple observation. Murder rates are highest in the cities that have the strictest gun control laws. Attacks happen most frequently in so-called gun-free zones. While General Gage learned of the danger of attempting to disarm a free citizenry, those in government today have not. So why do they keep pushing these failed attempts at disarming Americans? Because the second thing we need to remember is that gun control is not about controlling guns, but controlling you. Notice that while Lord Dartmouth thought that disarming the population would reduce violence, he was only concerned with violence against members of the British government and the colonies. In other words, Lord Dartmouth was not so much concerned about the guns, but about the actions of the colonists. It appears he thought that by disarming the colonists, he would remove their willingness to fight. Likewise, today, the reaction to violence is not to punish the criminals or even to increase the severity of laws against harming or killing others. No. The reaction to violence is to punish the innocent citizen who wishes to exercise his or her rights without infringement from the government. Those calling for new or expanded gun laws are attempting to punish the innocent for the crimes of the guilty. Even in the face of evidence showing the failure of their actions to reach the promised outcomes, the cry from the tyrant is not to punish the guilty, but to disarm the innocent. General Gage recognized that the only way to accomplish what Lord Dartmouth wanted was by using force. As Sir Isaac Newton had noted, though, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. What is true in physics is also true in politics and governance. By seizing the powder house in Charlestown, General Gage started a reaction that brought thousands of armed militia to Boston, where government was seated. What was General Gage to do? Lord Dartmouth was not only an aristocrat, he was a Secretary of State for America, and therefore General Gage's boss. By following the orders to suppress the people, General Gage was about to throw a match into the tinderbox of the disgruntled colonists. Back to my book, quote, April 19, 1775, Lexington, Massachusetts. A column of British soldiers was marching from Boston to Concord with orders to seize the powder house there and confiscate the colonists' ammunition. Warned of British troops marching on the town by Paul Revere, Captain John Parker assembled his men from the Massachusetts militia on Lexington Green. When the redcoats arrived at the green, their commander ordered the militia to disarm and disperse. See, in their attempt to disarm the colonists, the British sent soldiers to confiscate their ammunition. Today, we see law enforcement not only confiscating our weapons and ammunition, but many are trained to look at an armed citizen with suspicion, if not outright assumption, of evil intent. Why do you think law enforcement officers are trained to respond to the word gun? If you've been trained to draw your weapon and defend yourself every time you or someone on your team sees a gun, it's hard not to think of an armed citizen as a threat. Why else would some states require an armed citizen to announce that fact when they encounter anyone from law enforcement? And when that citizen makes the fact known that he or she is armed, what is the first thing many officers do? They disarm an innocent person for the officer's safety. So now you have an armed government official dealing with a disarmed citizen for whom they supposedly work. Now, if the officer wants a citizen disarmed for their safety, shouldn't the citizen want the officer disarmed for the very same reason? See, not only has law enforcement been indoctrinated with the idea that an armed citizen is inherently dangerous, but many citizens as well. Just look at the public's reactions to attempt to allow teachers and even retired law enforcement to be armed in schools, or business owners who put up no gun signs at their entrances. Even those who attempt to ban the open carrying of firearms in public seem to do so out of an irrational fear of seeing a firearm. The actions of both General Gage and the legal system today appear to have one goal, to create an imbalance of power between the citizenry and the government officials that supposedly work for them. This goes a long way to explaining why governments illegally impose restrictions on citizens being armed while in their presence or on public property. They aren't so much interested in controlling guns, but in controlling who has them. Now, when the British ordered the militia to disarm, what were Captain Parker's orders? Quote, "Stand your ground. Don't fire unless fired upon. But if they mean to have war, let it begin here." What happened next became known as the shot heard around the world and the beginning of the colonists' war for independence. When confronted with government officials who want to take our rights from us, any of our rights, we should learn from Captain Parker how we should react. It's just three simple steps. First, stand your ground. John Jay said we should read and study the Constitution so we would know when our rights are being violated and be better prepared to defend and assert them. That means standing your ground when government officials attempt to deprive you of it. It also means recognizing that the Constitution of the United States not only supersedes state laws, it's also the supreme law above state constitutions, even federal laws that contradict it. From Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution, quote, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding." Therefore, it is not disobedient to stand up to a government official who is violating the supreme law of the land. While many people call such things civil disobedience, if done properly, it's actually peaceful noncompliance. Next, don't fire unless fired upon. We should not instigate violence, but we should be prepared to respond to it. Should you instigate violence against a government official, you are wrong and should be tried and punished. However, like Captain Parker, when government illegally brings violence to your door, are you prepared not only to stand, but to defend yourself? Now, this is a dangerous place to be, so we should all ask ourselves if we are prepared for the consequences if we decide to respond to government violence. Now, the third item is powerful. But if they mean to have war, let it begin here. Why would someone want the war to begin with them? The answer is simple. So their children and their children's children will not have to fight. Are you willing to stand up and defend your rights now, or will you condemn your children to live under the tyranny you are unwilling to confront? You see, today the Second Amendment is not only mocked and ridiculed, it is frequently misrepresented. Quote, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." See, a well-regulated militia isn't necessary to protect you, your home, or even your right to hunt. It's necessary to ensure your state remains free. Rarely, though, do people ask, free from whom? The answer is not only simple, it's also quite obvious. See, Bambi isn't going to take your right to keep and bear arms away. Even criminals cannot disarm the population of a state. Only governments can exercise the power to infringe on the right of the people to keep and bear arms. So the well-regulated militia in the Second Amendment is to keep our states free from illegal government actions. Whenever a politician or government official claims to support the Second Amendment while trying to disarm or even regulate innocent citizens from exercising their rights, they are lying. Furthermore, they, like Lord Dartmouth, are trying to subjugate an otherwise free people. They are tyrants and need not only be recognized as such, but they need to be called out and stood up to. Santayana said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." It appears that not only those in elected office, but many Americans cannot remember the history of the Battle of Lexington. For that reason, I'm afraid we are condemned to repeat it. Our only hope is to remember our history, to stand up to tyrants, and if necessary, let the war begin here.
And we have so many examples today of history repeating itself. The list I've created, there's much more that I could even possibly cover in three, maybe even four episodes. But we really need to learn from our history, and that means looking at what is happening today and compare it to what's been happening over the last few months and in some cases, few years. you know, I laughed when I saw this article about the press secretary, Jen Psaki, saying, quote, no one is talking about overturning or changing the Second Amendment. You're right. They're not talking about it. They're simply ignoring it. They don't have to talk about overturning the Second Amendment. They don't have to talk about repealing the Second Amendment. They're just going to ignore the Second Amendment. And since we, the people, know so little about our rights and about the Constitution, most of us are just going to sit back and let it happen. Whether it's Representative Klobuchar promising action on gun control, or President Biden's recent quote-unquote gun control executive orders, ordering the Department of Justice to look into ways of controlling guns. This is exactly what Lord Dartmouth was telling General Gage to do. I see quotes from both Senator Schumer and from the president expecting the Senate will approve gun control legislation. Well, has anybody pointed out the fact that infringing on a person's right to keep and bear arms is illegal? You know, we often throw we'll say it's unconstitutional, which it is. But the Constitution's the supreme law of the land. So when you violate the Constitution, you're violating the law. And when those who have taken an oath to support the Constitution intentionally violate it, well, they're violating their oath of office. So when people tell us that they're not trying to get rid of the Second Amendment, but they're doing everything they can to make it irrelevant, they're lying. And if they're doing it under oath, they're committing perjury. And while there are several people, and in fact several states, that are standing up saying, no, 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 I don't see anybody really standing athwart the British column. Washington, D.C., in the story of the battle election, Washington, D.C. is that column of British Army soldiers coming to take your guns. Now, while the British came with soldiers, Washington's doing it with legislation and executive orders and rules and other tyrannical means. They are violating the law to come and get your guns. And while I have examples I'll mention of states that are trying to defend them, I haven't seen anybody stand athwart the road, look Washington dead in the eye and say, no, we're going to stand our ground right here. We are not going to fire unless fired upon. But Washington, if you want to start this war, fine, start it here so that my children don't have to fight it. Now, I've talked before about the executive orders that Biden has proposed to get the Department of Justice to find ways of regulating arms that they like to call ghost guns because, well, they aren't serialized. In other words, they're infringing on your right to have an arm that isn't tracked by the government. It's the same logic behind what they call universal background checks. Now, they claim these are to help keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them, but they generally ignore the fact that most criminals don't go to the gun store to buy their guns. And they don't go to the gun shows, by the way. There's no such thing as a gun show loophole. That's a myth meant to scare people. The only reason to have a background check is to create a universal background check is so that they can have a registry. See, a universal background check law doesn't do anything proactively to prevent criminals or people who are mentally unstable from getting firearms. First of all, background checks, by definition, are looking at the past. And as I've already stated, most criminals don't go through background checks because they don't buy their guns legally in the first place. So why a universal background check? Well, if you sell a firearm or you buy a firearm and you don't go through a background check, how does the government know about it? They don't. At least until some crime is committed and the gun gets traced and they say, wait a second, you know, you bought this gun at a gun store and this person ended up with a gun. How did it get transferred from A to B? Ooh, there was a transfer without a background check. Doesn't seem very effective. Which is exactly the purpose, at least in my opinion, the purpose of a universal background check is to come up with an excuse for a gun registry so that the government knows every citizen who has a gun. Now, while history has shown that not all gun registries had led to confiscations, every confiscation has started with a gun registry. Again, infringing on the right of the people to keep and bear arms. And they're saying they're doing it for good reasons, but guess what? You're breaking the law. You're violating your oath of office. You are exceeding the powers that the people have consented to. And I really don't care if you're president of the United States, a governor or a mayor, that is criminal. Why? But remember, the American people told our states that this was the guy we have in office. The American people, now, yes, there were problems with the 2020 election. I'm not here to discuss that on this show. But as a whole, there's been no evidence proven that President Biden assumed his office illegally. But the vast majority, but a large percentage of the American public told their states, this is the man we want executing the laws, which means a majority of the American people who voted said, this is the man we want exercising our power in our name. The power, in this case, to break the law, to violate their oath, and to steal our rights. And it's not simply coming for ghost guns and other, you know, and a gun registry. They want the federal government to encourage, right? One of the executive orders was for the Justice Department to publish a red flag legislation to states. They want to encourage the states to violate not just your Second Amendment, but your Fourth and Fifth Amendment as well. The rights protected by those, by that law. See, red flag laws are simply a way for one citizen to narc, to turn in another citizen. Think back, those of us who are old enough, think back to the Soviet Union. Think back to probably to even today's China, where citizens are afraid to express themselves because they're afraid their neighbor's going to turn them in. A red flag violates your right against unreasonable searches and seizures because basically a neighbor or a law enforcement officer or someone can simply say, I'm scared. I'm afraid this person's going to do something wrong. Go take their guns. That's not probable cause. Probable cause isn't I'm scared. Then they take their property, they steal their property, they deprive them of their property without due process because the guns are taken before there's any evidence actually given against them, before they're allowed their day in court. They're assumed guilty until proven innocent. These are an abomination to our rights as free citizens. And Joe Biden wants his Justice Department to figure out how to get states to do more of it by proposing legislation in the states, by interfering with the state's legislative process, by violating the separation of powers. Is it time to stand up yet, folks? Is it time to stand our ground? He's also proposing what they call evidence-based community violence intervention. I have a great community violence intervention. How about you learn how to protect yourself? One of the framers of the Constitution, a gentleman by the name of James Wilson, said, quote, It is the great natural law of self-preservation that cannot be repealed or superseded or suspended by any human institution. The right of citizens to bear arms in defense of themselves shall not be questioned. Every man's house is deemed by the law to be his castle, and the law, while it invests him with the power, enjoins on him the duty of the commanding officer. Every man's house is his castle. He ought to keep and defend it at his peril. And if anyone be robbed in it, it shall be esteemed his own default and negligence. Close quote. Every man's house is his castle. It is our responsibility to protect ourselves. Why do we continue to keep looking to someone else for government to protect us? That is our job. And when government comes and says, we're going to take away your guns because we're going to protect you, they are turning you into subjects, into servants, into slaves, into serfs. Dependent on the government. Dependent on the government for your protection, for your livelihood, for your health care. In other words, you will no longer be free. You will be subjects of a government. And you will live and breathe and have your being at their will, not at yours. So as they head out to break, let's keep in mind this idea that if we learn from our history, if we wish to be free, we must learn to stand for our rights, to tell government no when they infringe on our rights. And we must prepare ourselves for the consequences of that. So as I head out to break, I want to remind you that all of my shows go to podcast typically a day or two after the broadcast is heard on the radio. So if you want to hear them, you can check it out on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeartRadio podcast, many, many more, basically anywhere you can listen to your podcast. So be sure to subscribe. And if you would, please rate the podcast for me. It helps this podcast and the word we're spreading be seen by more people. So if you will do that, that would help tremendously. And I hope you'll join me right after the break.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. That's right. We are remembering the battles of Lexington and Concord. I've been focusing on the Battle of Lexington because of the history it teaches us. And it's a history that the American people and the American government are repeating. And if we don't learn to change the course of this history, then I'm afraid we're going to repeat what happened starting in 1775 in this country. Now, I've talked a bit about Joe Biden and his executive orders, and I've mentioned that Congress is working on legislation to infringe on your rights, to violate the law. Well, they're not the only ones. So I've talked about two of the three branches of federal government. Let's talk about the third. And I want to start out with the Nutty Ninth. Recognize, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is the most overturned circuit court in history. Basically, I think if the case goes to the Supreme Court, there's more than a 50-50 chance it's going to get overturned because they pay no attention to the Constitution. For example, in the case Young versus Hawaii, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals basically said, you know, the Constitution says a right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, but you have no right to actually bear arms. Well, actually, in that case, it said you have no right to openly bear arms. They said you don't have a right to carry openly in a 7-4 decision. Of course, the same court had previously said you don't have a right to concealed carry either. So according to the opinion, quote, there is no right to carry arms openly in public, nor is any such right within the scope of the Second Amendment. Well, Ninth Circuit, no, you're absolutely wrong. In fact, your error is indefensible. The Second Amendment clearly states the right of the people to both keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, which is exactly what the Ninth Circuit and the state of Hawaii are doing. I remember discussing over lunch with somebody who said, you don't have a right to carry a firearm. I said, really? So when the Second Amendment says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, when they're talking about bear arms, are they talking about an animal in the woods? Because that's the stupid you have to have. I mean, it takes a lot of education to be that foolish, that ignorant, that stupid to say that when a right shall not be infringed, to say that that's not protected by that. That's not within the scope. You cannot read, if you read the Second Amendment and say, well, no, the right to keep and bear arms is only for the militia, you need a remedial English class. By the way, I advise you, if you want to learn about the Constitution, the last place you go is a lawyer or a judge, because they don't study the Constitution in law school, which is how you get nonsense like this. They study constitutional law, which is the opinion of other judges. It's like a giant game of legal telephone. Some judge reads the Constitution, comes up with this harebrained scheme that says, well, it mentions the militia, and that gets repeated over and over and over again to the point where judges and lawyers are taught that the Constitution doesn't mean exactly what it says. What about the right to keep and bear arms is so bloody confusing? What about the words shall not be infringed is so hard to comprehend? Now, the court went on and they talked about Heller and this, and they came up with a bunch of legal mumbo jumbo. I don't care. The supreme law of the land, which, by the way, supersedes the opinion of judges. Let me say that again. The supreme law of the land supersedes the opinion of judges. Nowhere in the Constitution is a judicial branch given authority to comment on, to overturn, to reinterpret the Constitution. And if you read the 10th Amendment, that means it remains with the states. So what do we do when the government is coming for your arms? They are coming to confiscate your arms and ammunition. And you get some people in black robes that say, no, 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 I know it says shall not be infringed, but why do you think I say we need to stand up? See, the American people keep looking for someone to protect them. Maybe it's this politician, or maybe it's this law, or maybe it's this regulation. No, it's time for the American people to stand up and say, Ninth Circuit, You are idiots. In fact, I want Young and I want the people in the Ninth Circuit to contact their representatives in Congress and say, would you please impeach these idiots? I don't think someone should be impeached because they come to a wrong decision. But to blatantly say, for 7 of the 13 justices, to blatantly say there is no right to carry arms in public, either openly or concealed, within the scope of the Second Amendment, is a level of judicial misconduct that should not be ignored. And it's the fact that we have let these people ignore their oath of office, ignore the Constitution, ignore the law of the land, ignore their oath, even ignore the precedent established by Marbury versus Madison that a court must follow the Constitution above anything else, that has led us to a circuit court that is overturned so often. Since when did the American people become subjects of a court system, especially one that ignores its own creation? They serve at our consent, not the other way around. So when will the American people stand their ground? When will they? Now here's another court case. Now this one it's not as bad as, it's certainly not as bad as the Ninth Circuit one I just discussed, but it's probably not as good as we thought. The article here talks about how a federal appeals court ruled Trump's bump stock ban is unconstitutional. Personal pet peeve. Federal courts do not rule. They do not issue rulings. They do not rule. They are subjects. In fact, as Alexander Hamel described, they says they have neither force nor will, only judgment. Federal courts opine. They offer an opinion, and they have no mechanism to enforce their opinions. They're dependent on the federal executive to enforce their opinion. But here, for those who think the Republicans will save Second Amendment rights, remember, it was Donald J. Trump who said that an accessory to a firearm turns it from a semi-automatic into an automatic weapon, therefore it's regulated by the National Firearms Act. Like I said, I've said before, a pox on both their houses. But what's interesting about this, well, there's a couple things. First, it's based on what's called the Chevron deference. Chevron is a case, and again, courts pay no attention to the law. They pay more attention to their previous opinions. And it basically says that an executive agency should be given deference in its interpretation of laws and rules. I absolutely disagree with that. That's nuts. But they basically turned around and said, quote, because an agency's interpretation of a criminal statute is not entitled to Chevron deference, and because the ATF's final rule is not the best interpretation of Section 5845B, we reverse the district court's judgment and remand for proceedings consistent with this opinion. You see, basically what they were saying is ATF suddenly came up with this idea that a semi-automatic firearm changes when you put what's called a bump stock. Now, if you're not familiar with a bump stock, by the way, a bump stock, it's just a stock you place on a firearm. And what happens is it uses the recoil to reset the trigger, right? So normally, in a semi-automatic, you pull the trigger, you let go, you pull the trigger, you let go. Well, with a bump stock, it's the recoil itself that resets the trigger so it fires again, and it's quicker. But that doesn't make it an automatic firearm. It is still a semi-automatic firearm. One round is fired for each pull of the trigger. Period. End of story. And for ATF to suddenly decide, nope, we're going to change the rules. We're going to change the interpretation of the statute, of the law, so that we can call these things, well, they didn't actually call them automatic. They said they were automatic-like, and therefore should be covered under the National Firearms Act in direct violation of what the National Firearms Act actually says. So the good news is Trump's bump stock ban, this one, federal appeals court said it's unconstitutional. I'm curious to see if it gets appealed and where it goes. And I actually like the fact that this court turned around and said, no, the agency doesn't get to reinterpret the rules to its own benefit. So here's a situation where we had one where the court was really, really, really bad. Here we have another one where the court did pretty good. Personally, I would love to have seen them go a step farther and said the supreme law of the land says the right to keep and bear arms, not firearms, not guns, arms. Arms are defined as tools of offense or defense. Therefore, a bump stock is a tool. It's an accessory to a tool of offense or defense. Therefore, it is an arm, and the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So it's another example where we got the outcome, we got the opinion we wanted from this court, but we're still finding ways around what the Constitution actually says. So, you know, here's my other particular favorite. Now I saw an article that said that it was titled Biden Administration Tells Supreme Court Police Can Seize Guns in Homes Without a Warrant to Prevent Suicide. How do you like this one? I've talked about this before. I talked about the community caretaking doctrine. Quote, the community caretaking doctrine holds that police don't always operate as law enforcement officials investigating wrongdoing, but sometimes as caretakers to prevent harm in emergency situations. And this is true. We've asked our law enforcement to do a lot of different things. One is a community caretaking role. You know, you're worried about an elderly neighbor or, you know, grandma isn't answering the phone. And you ask law enforcement to do a wellness check. Hey, just would you please check and see if everyone's okay? But you see, the Constitution, the Fourth Amendment says that you have a right to be secure in unreasonable searches and seizures. See, police cannot conduct a warrant without a search unless they have a really good reason, what's called an exigent circumstance. There is an immediate need to search. A wellness check is not the same as a search. If someone's worried about me and says, hey, would you do a wellness? They call up the sheriff's department. They say, Paul, will you do a wellness check? Would you do a wellness check on Paul Engel? And they come to my house and they knock on the door and nobody answers and the car is there. And they decide, you know, we're going to enter the home just to make sure everyone's okay. That's not a search. As soon as they start looking around and finding stuff, that's a search. So if they enter my home and see a firearm, they don't have the right to seize that firearm. Even if it's out in plain sight. Now, in 1973, the Supreme Court, in a case called Katie versus Dombrowski, said that police could conduct warrantless searches related to the community caretaking functions, but only for vehicle accidents, meaning if they come to an accident, they can search the vehicle to make sure, I don't know, there's nothing else dangerous. Okay, they can search. I can see searching inside the passenger compartment, seeing is everyone okay? Is there a need for medical assistance? I could almost say they could search the trunk to see if, I don't know, maybe someone's hidden in the trunk. We've all seen enough gangster movies to see that's a possibility. But you see, that's not the same as a search or as a seizure. See, again, community caretaking is one thing. But again, the courts have taken a previous opinion, manipulated it to give police the authority, at least as far as Biden's concerned, to go in and steal. It's not seizing. This is flat out theft. But what really gets me is now we have the executive branch trying to dictate to the judicial branch how they should interpret the Constitution and the law. Again, this is President Biden violating his oath of office, ignoring the Constitution, ignoring his promise to faithfully execute the law, not judge the law, not tell the courts how they should judge the law. Right? Again, this is the president acting like a king, not like a chief executive. But again, it's guns. So, you know, I find it interesting. Apparently, President Biden doesn't think it's okay for someone to go in and, oh, confiscate the knife of somebody or confiscate the prescription drugs that could be used to commit suicide. No, that doesn't count. And he doesn't believe that the police should be able to confiscate your vehicle if they're in an attempt to prevent, a drunk driving. No, he wants to confiscate arms. He wants to seize guns. Why? Because he doesn't want the American people standing athwart him saying no. He doesn't want the American people armed so that they can stand their ground. He wants them to be sheep. Now, what's interesting is, in response to this, we've seen several different reactions at the state level. For example, I saw an article, the Massachusetts governor touts his state as a model for national gun control. Well, I used to live next door to Massachusetts, spent a lot of time in Massachusetts. I seem to remember them having a bit of a problem with murders and gun violence. Not as the same as other states, but and I seem to remember that even though it's extremely hard to get state permission to actually carry a handgun in Massachusetts, I seem to remember a lot of shootings in the Boston surrounding area and in Springfield and in Worcester. So if I were to look at his state as an example, I would say it's an example of the fact that gun control does not work. And then you look at Colorado, and they're drafting legislation that would give cities the ability to enact their own restrictions that go beyond state law. So now we're going to ignore the fact that the supreme law of the land, that every judge in every state is required to follow. We're going to ignore it at the federal level, and when the state ignores it, and that's not good enough for you, your cities can go even farther to restrict to infringe on your rights, to break the law, to ignore the consent of the governed. But there are many more stories coming out. Delaware passed a bill. The Senate passed a bill requiring handgun permits and banning magazines holding over 17 rounds. Well, 17 is better than 10, but guess what? They're still infringing on your right to bear arms. It's not simply the pistol or the rifle. It's the entire system. But then look, Missouri Sheriff Association is working on a bill to kill they're working to kill what's called the Second Amendment Protection Act. Apparently, Missouri Sheriff's Association doesn't want people to defend themselves. They want them dependent on the Sheriff's Department. Now, on the flip side, let's see, Arizona has bills to increase gun rights for concealed carry holders. What else we have? Republican AGs urge the court to strike down California's gun ban. New Hampshire Senate passed a bill to ban state enforcement of any new executive orders restricting firearms. Arizona passed a bill to end state enforcement of federal gun control. South Carolina considers an unorganized militia bill to boost gun rights. And what I find, and there's many more, right? I see Wyoming, South Dakota, New Hampshire, West Virginia, Iowa, even my home state, Tennessee. Many of these states are passing, and they're often, talking about how, these are laws that will help protect the Second Amendment. Well, here's problem number one. First of all, I'm not against these laws, right? I just want to see them in the light of truth, in the light of what they're actually doing. So if you live in one of these states, first thing you have to ask is the law that's being passed simply saying the state won't help the feds? So if the federal government comes up with an illegal gun control law, state resources won't be used. So instead of the state police or a county sheriff coming to lock you up, it'll be the FBI or ATF. The state's just not going to pay for it. In other words, the state's not going to protect you from the federal government. They're just not going to assist the federal government. To me, it's either one of two things. It's either a small step in the right direction, or it's a coward's way of appearing to do something while not actually doing something. It's the equivalent of the man who sees a purse snatching and chases the thief, then pretends to pull a muscle so he doesn't actually have to deal with the problem. But he can claim, see, I chased a purse snatcher even though I didn't really do it. I chickened out. But even states that are pushing a little more, there was I believe it was 2013, Kansas passed a Second Amendment Protection Act. And I remember listening to then Governor Brownback saying, you know, we're going to enforce this. We're going to arrest anybody, any federal agent that comes in and tries to enforce federal firearms laws on any weapon or accessory made, sold, and retained in the state of Kansas. And everyone cheered and said, look, it's a Second Amendment Protection Act. Isn't this wonderful? Isn't this great? And then as soon as ATF actually showed up, see, two schlubs who just actually believed their governor for some reason. I don't know why, but they believed their governor. See, one built a suppressor and he sold it to another one. It was made in Kansas. It remained in Kansas. It was an intrastate commerce. And ATF came in and arrested the two of them. And the state of Kansas did nothing. Governor Brownback, with all of his rhetoric, folded like a cheap suit. That's what worries about me about these laws. So we pass these laws, and first we think, oh, it's going to protect us, when all the state's really doing is saying, we're not going to pay for it. By the way, here in Tennessee, we've had some counties, and Virginia, was it last year, I think, went through this whole thing with a bunch of counties passing all these resolutions and ordinances, and usually it was the county would not help. That's not good enough. We do not hire representatives at the county level. We do not hire sheriffs. We do not hire representatives at the state level to not help. We hire them to protect us from the federal government. That is their job. That is the idea of checks and balances. Checks and balances is not simply between three branches of government, but it's between the feds, the state, and the county. So if you're going to weasel out, if you're going to say, hey, we just won't pay for it, I view it you as a coward when it comes to the Second Amendment. If you want to protect the Second Amendment, and if you want to protect the citizens of your state, you will pass a law like Kansas did. You will make it a crime to interfere with intrastate commerce, to interfere with the Second Amendment, and you will actually enforce it, even against federal officers. Federal officers are not superior to state officers. If they break state crimes, they are still subject to state crimes. And it's about time we demand our states do their job. So on this anniversary of the Battle of Lexington, of the shot heard around the world, I want the American people to learn from their history. I want those in government to learn from their history as well. The shooting war in the Revolution started when the central government came to deprive people of their arms, of their ammunition. That was the trigger. That is what turned the situation in the colonies from agitation and demonstration into a shooting war. And that is going to be the outcome if the federal and state governments don't learn their lesson. The lesson I want the American people to learn is that you are not subjects of a king. You have rights, but we need to stop looking for someone else to protect our rights for us. That it is time we stand our ground. We stand athwart the military. We stand athwart those who are coming to take our rights, and we say, no. No, we won't fire on you unless you fire on us first. But the answer is no. We said no in the Constitution. It's about time we start saying no in the streets. And we have to decide for ourselves, are we willing for the war to begin here? Now understand, if this turns into a shooting war, the American people have failed. I say that we must fight for our liberty. And if we will not fight at the ballot box, when it is easy, when there is little physical danger, when it takes a relatively small amount of effort, then we condemn our children to fight on the battlefield because we were too cowardly to stand up for our rights. They will have to fight for theirs. So yes, if they want war, if Joe Biden and his administration wants war, if these states like Hawaii and Massachusetts and Delaware want to steal the rights of their citizens, if they want that war, I would much rather it begin here with people who are old enough to remember when things were a little freer than to force our children and our children's children to fight. Because we were afraid. Because we wouldn't take the time and effort to vet our employees in government. We're going to force them to fire upon them. As Ronald Reagan said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States, where men were free. And if you found this an encouraging message, an inspiring message, please recognize you can find out more about my show and get all my latest podcasts and all the other shows on the America Out Loud Network. Go to AmericaOutLoud.com, check out our shows, look at the schedule, and you'll find out more. And please join me right here next time on the Constitution Study.